time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is your co-host, Amanda Teagarden. Actually, I'm the host, and my co-host is normally Don Wyatt. But today, I have a special co-host, Rhonda Vellamont-Smith of the Tulsa 912 Project. Welcome, Rhonda.
Well, thank you for having me, Amanda.
Oh, it's always delightful to have you here. She's a good friend of mine, and we plan to have a good time today. We are fortunate today. We're broadcasting from Oklahoma. The particulars are Tulsa area in Oklahoma. And the website for OK Safe is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. We have two other websites, exposinghealthcarereform.com, exposinghealthcarereform.com. And Rhonda, what do you think that website's about?
Healthcare. Maybe Obamacare?
Yes.
Maybe why we shouldn't?
Yes, why we shouldn't, and we're really what it's about. The third website is StopSmartMetersInOklahoma.org. Lots of information there, lots of activity in the opposition to smart meter implementation across the country. And the lead contact person for that is Joe Esposito, who lives in Owosso. Now, Rhonda, you're with the Tulsa 912 Project, and your organization has a couple of websites.
We do. We have Tulsa912Project.com and Boondoggleblog.com.
All right. And what's going on with Tulsa 912 that you can talk about?
Well, this week we've got Labor Commissioner Mark Costello, but we've stayed very busy and very active in contacting our legislators. Right now, of course, is the healthcare debate in Washington, D.C., and the shutdown. So we try to stay on top of what's going on there, as well as things that are going on locally in the state, such as the perhaps expectation, which I believe Jonathan's going to talk about, of the Governor Fallon wanting to expand or considering expanding Medicaid after we were successful last year in convincing her not to.
That would be bad. Did you think, as far as the government shutdown, did you ever realize how important the federal government was to your ability to walk on a concrete sidewalk in a park?
Or how about out in the woods? Or yeah,
who knew we were so helpless that we needed an escort?
Well, this is really kind of ridiculous, especially when you consider the pain that the administration is trying to place on the American citizens in retaliation for not getting your way. It's nothing more than bully tactics.
It is, and it's ridiculous. And so far, other than the parks, hardly anybody else has noticed that the government has shut down.
Well, the World War II vets noticed, but then these are the guys that stormed Normandy. I mean, I can't see a barricade standing in their way.
I hope not. All right. We have a special guest today. And, Rhonda, you already mentioned one of the issues with the funding of the government was the Obama administration's opposition to the defunding of what's called Obamacare, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, what we around here call the Unaffordable Care Act. Today's guest is Jonathan Small, who is the Fiscal Policy Director at OCPA, which stands for the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs. Obamacare, a.k.a. the Unaffordable Care Act, continues to be on a lot of people's minds, including ours, and opposition to its implementation is still strong in Oklahoma. You mentioned it, Rhonda. The people still oppose. We haven't changed our mind.
No.
And we expect the Oklahoma legislature and the Fallon administration to stay strong. In addition to the individual mandate and the creation of the insurance exchange, by the way, they found that the word exchange was too controversial, so they called it a marketplace. Exchange was the proposed expansion of Medicaid, which is today's subject, a costly system that most people know we cannot afford. Few people know as much about this as Jonathan Small. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you guys for having me. I've been looking forward to this discussion.
We're going to give you plenty of time because we don't have commercials. So we will take a break at the bottom of the hour, so you just stick around through the bottom. of that hour. But we want to thank you very much and for being here, because we know that you have a busy schedule. And so tell our listeners who are not familiar with you a little bit about yourself, and tell us briefly about what you do with the OCPA.
Thank you. Well, first of all, as you mentioned, I'm the Fiscal Policy Director for the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs. We are the state's free market think tank, if you will, that tries to look at approaching issues from the free market perspective. We generally tend to towards kind of economic spending related issues, and then of course, as you know, since government spends so much money, that ends up in having us touching a lot of issues as well. We're happy to be a part of the network of other think tanks and grassroots organizations that are in Oklahoma and nationally that are trying to help make sure that policymakers look at things from a free market perspective. Kind of my background, because you might be wondering, well, why is a nerdy certified public accountant from Oklahoma City talking about healthcare? I actually had the privilege of working at the insurance department during the implementation and the creation of Obamacare. I, like many of you all, have had the great privilege of reading the 2,000-plus page bill, and was there to see some of the things that were predicted in a bipartisan manner about the problems with the law and why it was really important that Congress stop and listen and not go forward, and they did anyway. And as we've seen, Obamacare's failing left and right, and now the biggest decision that states are left with is whether or not they're going to expand Medicaid as allowed by Obamacare, or in some, you know, behind a closed door deal that can be hashed out with Lynn Sebelius.
Hey, Jonathan, do you mind if I jump in here? And
Please do. That's the best thing.
Well, I
don't want to let a CPA talk for
Well, I understand.
Amen
well,
to that.
I just think we need to maybe describe what Medicaid is. You know, exactly what it does, how it works, who qualifies for it now, and perhaps who will qualify for it later, you know, if things go on the way that they're headed.
You ask a great question. So the history of the Medicaid program, it is a welfare entitlement program that's intended to reimburse medical providers for the way the program was originally intended. It was for the age, blind, and disabled, destitute, poor persons, and, you know, it's a whole other discussion whether or not even that program should have been created in the first place. But it had kind of a defined population. Its projections, like all entitlement projections, were very small. So again, it's just focused on age, blind, and disabled, and extremely poor persons. So around 57% of the federal poverty level for an adult. For older citizens, it could be as up to 100% of the federal poverty level.
So what is this costing Oklahoma right now?
Right now, that's a great question. Right now, what's actually happened with the Oklahoma Medicaid program is Oklahoma took the bait and expanded Medicaid, not Obamacare Medicaid expansion, but other expansions like to pregnant mothers and children. So because of these various expansions now, there's a few things going on. The age-blind and disabled population now only makes up 16% of the people that are on Medicaid. So the population that this program was originally intended for only makes up 16%. They also only make up about 47% of the cost. So now the program spends more money on populations than the population it was originally created for. Now, we spend in Oklahoma more on the Medicaid welfare entitlement program than we do on state spending on common education and higher education combined.
Go ahead and say that again.
Yes, we now already in Oklahoma, we spend more on the Medicaid entitlement program than we do on state spending on common education and higher education combined.
So that leaves us about 4% left for everything else that we've got to spend money on.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And in fact, even those that are proponents of big spending in other areas The Chancellor of Higher Education, Glenn Johnson, said our existing Medicaid growth has crowded out spending growth in higher education. So we already have a challenge with our Medicaid program, apart from any expansion efforts that might be attempted for Obamacare.
So if Obamacare does go into effect, how is that going to change and how is that going to affect Medicaid as we know it?
Well, if our state chooses to expand Medicaid as allowed by Obamacare, you know, remember in the only sane decision that the Supreme Court made regarding Obamacare, they said that the states couldn't be forced into it. Originally, the Obama administration and then the law wanted to force states to do it, but the Supreme Court ruling allowed for that not to happen. So now, at a state's option, they can expand Medicaid to anyone at 138% of the federal poverty or lower. As you can imagine, there's a whole lot more people than just the aged, blind, and disabled, or pregnant mothers and children, and you're talking about anyone under 138% of the federal poverty level. And so what this would do is it would give an entitlement to single, able-bodied, working adults, and it would add a new entitlement to a population that often is not eligible for other entitlements because historically, our society has thought those groups of people should work and get the number of jobs that are needed to provide for the things that they need. And if something costs too much, then it's time to look at ways that market forces can help bring down costs.
For our listeners, Jonathan, you're using the term called the federal poverty level for comparison state. Can you tell people what that is? In Oklahoma, isn't that $11,400
right,
for an individual?
Yeah, it's right around $11,000, $12,000. And if you go up to 138%, you're talking about near $15,000 a year. So it would be a job that might be a little bit more than minimum wage if someone was working full-time.
Without Medicaid, are there other options for somebody to get health care?
Actually, there are a number of other options for people to get health care without Medicaid. Particularly in Oklahoma, there are a number of free health care clinics. There are also a number of what you would call community clinics where they, for a small fee, allow people to get care. One thing that's important to note is that the current Health and Human Services Secretary, Dr. Terry Klein, pointed out that state taxpayers subsidize a teaching hospital at OU where they have a sliding scale where people can come and pay based on their need. So there's a number of options. Also, many providers and many hospitals, if you ask them, will allow individuals to pay cash for the care that they need. There's a number of options, number of payers. There's catastrophic plans that people can purchase for when they have a really acute medical problem, and that lowers health insurance premiums. So there was a number of different options that could be pursued or could have been enhanced before the federal government decided to fully take over somewhere between a sixth and a fifth of the national economy.
So people aren't dying in the streets in Oklahoma?
No, that would be correct. In fact, the proponents of the Medicaid expansion regularly remind us that because of federal law, which is, this was an intrusion and something that should be fixed, because of federal law, it's known as EMTALA, or its initials. It says that any hospital that's serving must meet the needs of the community. And what that means is that if someone needs care and comes in, they have to stabilize that person for care. So there's not an instance where someone has a life-threatening illness and is disadvantaged from getting that care versus others that may be in a population.
Do you, I think this is, Rhonda, don't you think this is a perfect example, this whole Medicaid, as I was listening to Jonathan speak about the history of it, what it was originally intended for, which was the aged, the blind, and the disabled, and those who are truly destitute. Now, to expand who that coverage was before Obamacare even became effective, is an example of mission creep. and why government shouldn't be engaged in activities that are outside their duly enumerated powers.
Well, no, that's right, because you can see that once the government puts its hand in it, it just kind of makes a big mess out of it, of something that was being handled in the private sector, so to speak, other than the small amount of people that were on Medicaid for the reasons that they were. But yeah.
Which truly was a need.
No.
But it used to be in our society that there would be charity care.
Yes.
And people could get care through charitable means, and doctors and hospitals provided charity care without the government's interference.
No, you guys are exactly right, and you're bringing up a great point. I mean, to give you an idea of how bad it's gotten in Oklahoma. In Oklahoma now, our Medicaid programs, the state taxpayers, are paying for the births of 64% of all births in Oklahoma. They are paying for they're paying for 67% of all the long-term care bed days. So that's normally something like a nursing home or something like that. And we have a full now near 26% of our population that was enrolled in Medicaid at some point during 2012. That was over 1 million people. And you bring up a great point. Once the government began to hand out money and write checks for care, it incentivized cost growth in care, just like we've seen with ethanol subsidies and just like we've seen with higher education. As you guys know, whenever government decides that, oh, hey, that's a great thing, everybody should have it, and we're going to take money from citizens to give that money to other people for that item we like, it significantly drives up the cost.
When you say incentivized cost groups, is that the same thing as saying that now you got a constituency, you got to help?
Nope, you're exactly right. That's exactly what happens. You know, today we don't have a lot of time to get into all of how hospital finance works, but now we've got what used to be, as you mentioned, just outright charity care that was provided. If you talk to a lot of older doctors, they'll tell you that they've regularly delivered children and only got paid, you know, 50% of what they wanted, or that they set bones for people in their family when their child broke a bone, a number of those things, and they would do that at half cost, and the community would be grateful for it and would revere the doctor or even that local hospital. Well, now that's not the case. Now we have these large, huge nonprofit hospitals who actually make money when they lose money. So what happens is they overinflate their costs. Then they negotiate with insurers in negotiations that are apart from the person actually paying the premium. And that's why healthcare costs have gotten so high. The problem with our healthcare system in the United States of America is not that there's not enough money in it or that people need more access to coverage. It's that the costs are too high, and government is the number one culprit in that.
Well, what's frustrating, Jonathan, is when you go to the hospital or even you just go to the doctor's office and you have insurance, you have no idea how much you're being charged for that visit outside of your copay. And I remember talking to my doctor one time, and I said, do you know how much money you charge for a doctor's visit? And he said, well, it depends on which insurance company it is. That's kind of ridiculous when they're charging the insurance company $175 for me to go to for a visit. I make a $25 copay, and then they pay him $39. You know, why can't we just have a menu up there that says, here's how much your office visit's going to be, and if you don't file it with insurance, you know, just you can pay cash. You know, I know earlier this year, I got a CAT scan for $150 cash because I chose not to go where my doctor was going to refer me to, which, of course, was that hospital. I went out and I found a place that I could pay cash, and I got it for $150. There's no way that would have worked if I'd have used my insurance. And so I think that our medical stuff has to do with personal responsibility, taking personal responsibility for the decisions that we make in regard to our health care.
No, you're exactly right, and that's the problem. You know, you can go get a price quote for just about everything except for what's most vital is your health care. And again, you know, government created that by making taxpayer payments for the amount of uncompensated care, allowing nonprofit hospitals to conceal their pricing and not deal with it in an upfront way, and it's created this system. The other thing that the federal government did is it allows a special deduction when health insurance is purchased through an employer. But if you just take your paycheck and then you go and buy health insurance, you don't get a deduction as well. So that causes an incentive towards third-party health insurance payment as opposed to the insurer having to work with individuals and having to negotiate based on what individuals want as opposed to a fewer number of employers that have lobbyists that can spend a lot of time at Congress. One of the reasons that it's really important that you guys are spot on, that it's important to get that aspect in order to kind of fully understand what's going on with the Medicaid expansion and why it's being pushed.
Rhonda, you brought up a good point, is to post your prices. You know, when you go to a lot of places, you know ahead of time how much that service is going to cost. And it's not the same when you go to a hospital or a doctor. However, there are some organizations that are out there. I'm seeing more and more of this in the Oklahoma City area. There's the Oklahoma Surgery Center.
Right.
A Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where Dr. Keith Smith is an anesthesiologist. That is a physician-owned facility, standalone unit, and they'll post their prices online. And they're a sixth to a tenth the price of that surgery at a hospital. And so if you go to the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, just put that in your search engine and you'll come up and you'll be able to find that. There's another thing where you can go, as Rhonda pointed out, you just go and you go pay cash. I like referring people to the Grassroots Healthcare in Tulsa, which is at the corner of 91st and Sheridan in Tulsa. And their prices for a drop-in visit are posted on a board, and you know ahead of time how much it's going to cost. You pay cash, and here's what I really like, no electronic health records. And you go in, you get your service, you pay your fee, and then you get out. That takes care of a lot of people's medical needs, incidents that just happen. You know, it's an accident. You've got a cut, or you've got an ear infection, you've got strep throat, et cetera. That's something that's simple. That can be done on a cash basis. And that is the free market.
Well, you know, here's the difference. I have a grandson that's 5 years old, and he is all boy. And in the last 12 months, he's had to go in and get stitches on two different occasions. The first time, he busted his chin open. My daughter had to take him to the hospital, to the emergency room. And by the time everything was said and done, her total cost for three stitches in his chin was in excess of $2,200. Now, when he sliced his finger with a pocket knife and took him to urgent care, he got five stitches in his thumb, and it was under $500. They don't have insurance. They're self-paying. There shouldn't be that huge of a discrepancy or a span in differences of the prices for the same exact service.
I tell you what, here's the solution. We're talking about this here. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the universities. We're going to buy up all those used textbooks.
That's right.
And we're going to teach ourselves medical care. And then we're going to talk to a returned veteran who did triage out in the war zone. And we say, how do you suture somebody?
There you go.
And we'll just put the kid up on the kitchen table, say, quit your screaming. We're going to stitch you up right here. That's how we're going to do it.
Jonathan, you want to be our first patient?
Well, I was going to say, well, that's what the NyQuil's for the child. So.
We're coming up pretty quick to the bottom of the first half of America in the Balance. Our guest today is Jonathan Small. And Jonathan, when we come back after the break, let's start talking about who is opposing the expansion of Medicare and who is supporting the expansion of Medicare. I want to talk in particular about a particular group called A Plan for Oklahoma, and I think we'll be really interested in who is behind this expansion and the arguments that they're using. And real quick, just as a teaser, who is behind A Plan for Oklahoma?
You know, it actually, if you go to their website, one of the things that we love to do, you guys love to do this as well in research, is just use their own words, and they mention that they are hospitals and a number of other business-related interests.
Chamber
that
of Commerce.
Want to pursue, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it's definitely predominantly driven and funded by those that will financially benefit from expanding Medicaid.
All right. Well, that's going to be kind of interesting because there is a financial incentive for those people. to expand Medicaid, even though we really can't afford it as a country. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my special co-host today, Rhonda Villamont-Smith. Our guest today is Jonathan Small of OCPA. We're going to ask you to stick around through the bottom of the hour for a short break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my very special co-host today, Rhonda Villamont-Smith. Do you like CCR?
I do.
That's Creedence Clearwater Revival for our younger guest, Jonathan Small from OCPA. Jonathan, are you still there?
Yes.
All right. I thought we lost you there for a minute. All right. We were talking at the beginning of the break about opposition and support and who was behind a plan for Oklahoma. But let's start off with who opposes the expansion of Medicaid in Oklahoma? Let me rephrase that. What reasonable people oppose the expansion of Medicaid in Oklahoma?
Well, you bring up a great question. So here's kind of the main points for why those that are opposed to expansion do. The Affordable Care Act, the way it's set up, or Obamacare, which is what the president calls it, what it says is that if you will put, in Oklahoma's case, up to 250,000 new people on your entitlement program, so in other words, if we take our Medicaid enrollment up to 33% of the population, basically, the federal government promises to pay 90%. We all know how well it works out when you believe the government's promises about Obamacare, don't we?
Is that like, I'll respect you in the morning?
Yes, and the other one, a plan for, or the if you like your plan, you can keep it, you know,
right.
Those kinds of things. So realistic estimates show that if Oklahoma did that, by 2023, Oklahoma's cost for that would be $1.6 billion. And by 2023, our portion, the taxes that we would have to pay, would be $6.5 billion. That's equal to the appropriated budget for last year by the state legislature. So because of those costs, because of, as you know, that Medicaid and studies such as the study done in Oregon found that Medicaid did not measurably increase health outcomes of those that were on it, in a number of states such as Maine and Arizona, Illinois and others where they expanded Medicaid, they saw it exceed estimates. In Arizona, their costs were four times what they estimated. Their population was two times what they estimated. So in a number of those states, when it cost too much, what they ended up having to do is raise taxes. Other than their pension payments, the Medicaid budget is what nearly broke Chicago within the last couple of years. California right now is actually suing medical providers to cut their payment. And guess who entered a brief on behalf to take the side of cutting those payments?
Who?
That would be one Barack Obama's administration. So all of the talk about how that if you expand Medicaid, it won't impact the care for others or that it won't cause problems and it won't be too costly, history has just shown that that's not the case, that it's very costly. So the people that have thus far taken that position is most notably in Oklahoma is a Senator Tom Coburn. In fact, yesterday I had the privilege of joining him in an op-ed in the Tulsa World where we discussed why expanding Medicaid threatens Oklahoma's bright future. But then a number of other lawmakers, as you said, based on communication from many grassroots groups in Oklahoma, including the Tea Party in the Tulsa area and also OK Safe, was Governor Fallon. She made the decision to reject Obamacare's Medicaid expansion because of the costs and because of the doubt that it would actually achieve the results as promised.
Also, could have had something to do with the 3,000 phone calls she received in one day regarding it also.
Yes, that's right. And as you know, our lawmakers eagerly await and are encouraged by feedback from their constituents. That's what lets them know that an issue is important. We've also seen Speaker T.W. Shannon speak out in strong opposition to Medicaid expansion and the encroachment of government into health care. And as you guys remember, it was actually pro tem Brian Bingaman in the Senate who led the effort to reject the Obamacare exchange grant back in the 2011 session.
Isn't that amazing how that happened?
Yes, it is.
So, yeah.
As groups like OK Safe and Tea Party groups across the state made their voice known, and I know you and Rhonda took that long trek down the turnpike here to Oklahoma City many times. I'd see you guys in the hall. That's what communicated to lawmakers what was wrong with the act. Well, as you can imagine, the groups that support the Medicaid expansion, they spent a lot of money lobbying Congress for that. They spent a lot of money in campaign donations, advertising, sweat and tears to kind of get the law in a way that they could live with it. The number one kind of example of those pushing for it would be either hospitals or some of the larger health insurance companies. They had a vested interest in Obamacare and lobbied hard for the act. Obamacare is actually is supported outright by the American Hospital Association in Oklahoma. It's supported broadly and vigorously by the Oklahoma Hospital Association. And they are the chief ones behind much of the effort to try to sway lawmakers to change their minds about the Medicaid expansion.
Now, a lot of these organizations that you're talking about, these insurance companies and hospitals, they're also well ingrained in the local chambers of commerce as well as the state chamber of commerce. Is that where you're seeing a lot of the lobbying efforts coming from, is the Chamber of Commerce?
Most definitely. We saw a recent op-ed that kind of alluded to a plan called the Levitt Report asking for trying to keep that open, the plan Insure Oklahoma open at whatever costs. We see regularly the presence. We know that in such communities as Lawton, Altus, and many others, they're visiting the chambers and telling them how if we don't expand Obamacare, or if we don't expand Obamacare and implement it and do its Medicaid expansion, that it's going to decimate hospitals, which is interesting given wall of the new building that hospitals are
doing.
That's
what I was going to say. I mean, when you look at all the expansion going on here in the Tulsa area of the hospitals and how big they are and the parking lots that are now buildings, and it's like, and you're going to tell me that you're having financial issues?
Well, you said that hospitals make money when they lose money. And Dr. Keith Smith, in our interview, if you go back and check the archives for our listeners, if you're interested, and go listen to the interview a couple weeks ago with Dr. Keith Smith, made the same point, Jonathan, that the hospitals that are complaining that they don't have money all have cranes in the air doing massive, very expensive additions to their buildings. So how do hospitals make money when they lose money?
Well, and what they do is they have what's called a charge master, or their master pricing list. And most people, when you go in for medical care, when that long list of paperwork you fill out is generally an attestation, technical term. It's you saying or promising you're going to pay your medical bill based on that system or the agreement that your health insurance company has. And in Oklahoma, make no mistake, hospitals make big money off of Medicaid in Oklahoma. Right now in Oklahoma, hospitals make approximately $800 million. To give you the names of some of the largest recipients of Medicaid dollars, Integris Hospital Systems, St. Francis Hospital Systems, Hillcrest Medical Center. For example, Integris is $83.4 million. St. Francis is $76.2 million. Hillcrest Medical Center is $57 million. OU Physicians is $53 million. St. Anthony Hospital in Oklahoma City area is $33 million. Mercy Health is $32 million. St. John's Medical Center is $32 million. And that was just in 1 year, in fiscal year 2012. So as you can see, they have a very steep vested financial interest in trying to get more tax dollars from Oklahomans and the federal government.
So when you say they made those millions of dollars, that's on top of their expenses. That is a net income?
That would be included in how they arrive at that number. But when you brought up when they make money, when they lose money, the way hospital pricing works is I use the term a black box that comes up with this price and says a bottle of Tylenol at Walmart normally costs you $5, but it costs them $25. To the extent they sell that bottle of Tylenol any less, they write and report that, hey, we sold that bottle to someone for $10, so that means that we had uncompensated care of $15. And that's this whole scheme that's got to be fixed and worked out. And if it isn't, that's why we say the most dangerous thing to do right now would be to try to expand Medicaid and pump more taxpayer money in that system.
When you're going to the doctor, you fill out all these forms. When you were talking about which hospitals, you mentioned Integris and Hillcrest. And it was kind of funny. I recently learned that they are part and participants in the High Performance Network. So they are part of a insurance network that exchanges electronic health records within a certain cluster of providers. And they have partnered with an insurance company to share that information. So when you go to the doctor, those particular facilities and a lot of them other ones have already accepted money from the federal government to convert all their records to electronic format and that are compatible with the same systems that the insurance companies have. So we have a health information exchange, and those providers are part of the health insurance exchange. And so we're connecting these two exchanges. The common connection is the payer, in this case, would be an insurance company. So you've got a connection between three entities, the provider, which is the hospital, the patient, which is you, and then the payer. And once you create that connection, that digital connection between all of those, you have the coup d'etat that we're calling Obamacare.
So, no, and you know, Amanda, you have been very dedicated and enduring in pointing out that this try to shift to consolidate power and get more information on IT infrastructure, it existed before Obamacare, but Obamacare puts it on steroids, drafts all the biggest superstars in the league, if you will, to try to move that on. And as your as you mentioned, your guest, Dr. Keith Smith, has mentioned that in a lot of these offices where they're cutting costs, one of the big ways they save money is by not moving to these big, gigantic information systems that require lots of administrative expenses that are intrusive, that then you have to worry about whether or not somebody can hack it from, you know, their bedroom while they're eating Twinkies and in the middle of playing a video game. Those are just some of those challenges. And, you know, that's why we've got to be vigilant here in Oklahoma, and why it's important that we understand that those entities that want Obamacare's Medicaid expansion, they cut a deal with the Obama administration and Congress, and they made a bet, and they lost part of that bet when the Supreme Court thankfully ruled the way it was supposed to. As my colleague says, Michael Cannon with the Cato Institute, that he thinks that lawmakers shouldn't punish taxpayers for the sins of the hospitals and those that wanted the Medicaid expansion or Obamacare. It will wreck the state's budget, no doubt. And it will create a permanent entitlement class for a group of people who have the ability to work and get extra employment to try to purchase the health insurance that they need.
Do you sense that the Fallon administration is weakening in their opposition to the expansion of Medicaid?
You know, what I think the best thing to do is, you saw a great story article from Pat McGuigan at capitalbeatok.com where he talked about some changing answers from the Fallon administration, where there was not a direct and overt, we are not going to expand Medicaid in any form using any Obamacare funds, no matter how it's formed. That's actually what Bobby Jindal did in an editorial within the last couple of months, and you've seen him since. He also joined Dr. Tom Coburn in a national op-ed about why Medicaid shouldn't be expanded. And so I think that's why it's important for those that feel that Medicaid expansion is the wrong way for the state of Oklahoma, that you've got to communicate. Because, you know, I can see it, and they know that we don't support that idea. The lobbyists and the hospitals and all those that are interested that want it. And there is constant pressure, lobbying, and effort being put on the governor and other lawmakers to get them to cave and expand. And so that's why it's important for them to hear from us that we think it's the wrong thing, because if we don't continually say it's the wrong thing and under no circumstances or any form should it be adopted, it's going to.
Well, that was where I was going to go with you real quick. I was going to let you know first that I did read the article that you and Senator Coburn did in Tulsa World, in the Tulsa World yesterday, and it was very good, and it's extremely informative, and I would encourage anyone and everyone to go and read it. It's called Expanding Medicaid Threatens Oklahoma's Bright Future. It's by Senator Tom Coburn and Jonathan Small, and it was in the Tulsa World yesterday.
October 6, 2013.
But Jonathan, you know, people are very concerned, of course, with everything that's going on now in the federal government and, you know, the defunding and stuff. But we have to focus what's going on here in our state. So what could you tell people, or what would you tell people is the best thing that they could do to discourage our lawmakers and our governor from, you know, falling into the pit of expanding Medicaid?
You know, I think the greatest thing that they could do is communicate with their lawmakers and the governor's office and say, hey, we appreciate the strong stance that you took. We don't want any form of Obamacare's Medicaid expansion or any extra funds that Obamacare might want to try to siphon off for Oklahoma. It doesn't matter what program we use. I would communicate. I would definitely communicate. We definitely don't want the federal government to funnel more money into Insure Oklahoma and ruin it and put its Obamacare mandates on it. And you can do that through emails, obviously. You know, that's a way to communicate and educate lawmakers about what your position is on a different issue. And then also, you know, sharing things like Dr. Coburn's op-ed. And we also have educational materials at our site at www.ocpathink.org, where we are repeatedly talking about the issue of Medicaid expansion.
I do want to make sure that we get Governor Fallon's number out to everyone so that they can make sure that they contact her office and in a very polite yet firm way let her know that we want no expansion, we want no funding, and we don't want the federal government to give us any more money in for Insure Oklahoma so that they get involved. And those were the three points that you wanted communicated. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that if people are definitely want to stop any chance of the Medicaid expansion, that's what you're going to have to communicate, because what's going on right now is now they're using false polling and going around saying, oh, Oklahomans like Insure Oklahoma, so if we do Obamacare through Insure Oklahoma, it'll be okay.
Right.
And so you've got to communicate that that's not okay.
Well, Governor Fallon's number, for all those that are interested, is area code 405-521-2342.
Say that again.
405-521-2342.
That's Governor Mary Fallon, Republican Governor of Oklahoma.
And we were successful last year in getting her through phone calls and all of our efforts in getting her to reject the expansion of Medicaid, and I think that we can continue to get her to stand firm. It is an election year next year.
All right. And websites?
Mine?
No. Our guest.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, Jonathan.
It is www.ocpathink.org.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
It is www.ocpathink.org, and you can find all the different issues that we're working on, Medicaid expansion, trying to spread economic freedom by cutting taxes for Oklahoma families, talking about how to make sure that we have school choice, since taxpayers are required to contribute to the education system, and we want to make sure that it operates the best for students, not unions and government employees. So you can get all that information again at www.ocpathink.org.
You have a blog site, don't you?
Yes, and if you go to that website, you can click on the blog tab, and you can go and see where I and my other colleagues write daily. We generally have a blog that posts every day, Monday through Friday.
Hey, Jonathan, if Amanda doesn't mind, I'm going to kind of jump over here and get a little personal with some of the things that are going on in our business. My husband and I own a small business. We provide medical insurance for our employees, and I received a letter just dated in September that says that effective January 1, 2014, group health plans are subject to certain fees mandated by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And so these fees include Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute fee, health insurance tax, the transitional reinsurance fee, and the risk adjustment fee. Now, they're estimating, because they don't have any definite numbers, but they're estimating that the fees on top of what our insurance payments are going to be are anywhere at between 4 and 6%. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I am. And that was what everyone was talking about. There's a great document from the Americans for Tax Reform, and it discusses the roughly 21 tax types that are located in Obamacare. And that's another reason why it's important to depress the turnout for exchanges to make sure we don't enroll in Medicaid, because that's just going to drive up more reliance. And, you know, Rhonda, I know that you value your employees, but, you know, you can't spend money that you don't have.
Right.
And Obamacare puts many small business owners in that situation. There's a great article by Investor Business Daily where they list the over 300 companies that have publicly come out and admitted that they're either cutting hours or cutting jobs due to the costs related to Obamacare.
Well, you know,
and the Medicaid expansion will just make that worse.
Exactly. And you know, I got off the phone. I called my insurance agent today. We're not up for renewal just yet. But I asked him if he could give me an example of something, and he said yes, he had just gotten his. And he's in a group plan, And he is a male in his mid-50s with three children. He has a $1,000 deductible, and his insurance payments per month went from $755 to $1,250. That's a 66% increase. I mean, people are not going to be able to afford the affordable care.
Nope, you're exactly right, and it's going to be made even worse by those things we talked about earlier. You know, we've got this vicious cycle where you have inflated prices and a bunch of government money that's been flooded into the market, and then you've got the forced mandate that tries to say that everyone has to buy it, and it's just this spiraling out of control. And that's why there's a lot of people that think that this was probably somebody's intention for this to collapse, so that then a single-payer system
right.
can step in and be in favor. And, I mean, you don't have to do conjecture about that. Barack Obama is on video telling one of the union groups that he's for single-payer.
Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi
right.
as well. Now, I have just one quick question for you before we have to wrap up. Have you tried to get on healthcare.gov?
I have not tried to get on. I've heard lots of horror stories about it. And my few little computer problems that I have at home and work frustrate me. I'd probably throw my computer if I tried to actually log on and enroll.
Well, it's healthcare.gov is the website that you would go to. And Rhonda, I just want to remind you and your friends and Jonathan that the penalty for not buying essential minimum coverage is 1% or $95 per individual for 2014. So just consider that when you're doing your budget for 2014, that it might be worth your while to consider getting minimum coverage someplace else for your family and paying the penalty. And that's a reality that is out there. So $95 versus a $500 a month increase, you can do the math to see what might be better, and you can get catastrophic coverage or a high deductible plan somewhere else. And you heard that here. We've got 1 minute, and Jonathan, I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us and for all the good work that you're doing with OCPA. And Rhonda, I'm very grateful that you were available.
Well, I thank you for asking me.
To be here as well. You did a great job, and we'll have to have you back. Don is on assignment, as they say, which means he's on vacation.
That's right.
With his family. So he took a break, which he deserves, and he'll be back in a couple of weeks. This is the battle that's on the forefront of everyone's mind right now, is what are we going to do with this Unaffordable Care Act, which is truly going to break the bank and cripple this country. And we are encouraging our congressmen to stay strong on the continuing resolution and
yes.
do not waver on defunding Obamacare. Jonathan, thank you very much. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Rhonda Villamont Smith. We thank you for listening to this hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. May God bless you.
Thanks, Jonathan.